This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents The Greatest Risk. Written by Kristen Ashley. Performed by Lizbeth Gwynn.
Prologue. Opposites attract. 6. 2 years ago. Six sat in the booth at the Bee's Honey and watched. She watched what she'd seen time and again. She watched what set a heavy weight to taking residence in her stomach. Mistress Amélie had selected her toy for the evening and was going back to the playrooms. And Master Stellan was sitting in his booth watching her go, a look of disappointment on his usually remote but always extortionately handsome face that he did not hide fast enough. Thus, Six caught it.
Not gonna go anywhere, sweetheart.
She turned her eyes to the man sitting across the semicircular booth with her. A booth he owned because he owned the Honey, a luxurious, exclusive BDSM sex club in Phoenix that had sister clubs in cities across the West. Arius Weathers was a very large black man with a bald head, a thick beard, and a beautiful soul.
Pardon? Six asked. Lee and Stellan,
he answered.
It's not gonna happen.
I don't know what, she began.
Yes, you do,
he said softly. She spoke no more, because Arius was a handsome black man with a beautiful soul and a number of sex clubs he owned and operated. He was also a dom, and a good one, thus keenly observant and empathetic. Last, he was a friend, and an excellent one. In other words, with his friends, that empathy hit extremes. She's into him, and he's into her, Six replied.
They'd never make it. He needs a challenge, and so does she,
Arius told her. Six looked down at her glass of red wine, something she'd ordered, wishing it was a cocktail with gin involved. But that wouldn't work with the rep she had going at the Honey. Doing this, thinking that two doms finding their way together in life when sexually they didn't quite fit, would be one hell of a challenge.
Opposites attract.
Those quiet words from Arius had her head coming up again, and her eyes finding his.
Can't say how I know. Outside what you know, only I know. Just will say that I know. You want it in there? You could turn his eye.
Arius shared. She was not going to put herself out there like that. She couldn't. She was strong. A female Goliath. A superhero with a vagina and a 5'7" trim but nice ass, though not so much in the breast department, long-legged frame. Straight up. Fucking A. But not with something like that. Not that. I've got an assignment taking me out of town, she reminded him, and watched his lips form into a frown. I don't know when I'll return. Or if. Phoenix was awesome. There were good restaurants, there were palm trees, there were hiking trails. Sedona and Prescott were just hours away, if you wanted spiritual enlightenment in a place that proved God existed, or a break from the pounding sun, in a place that proved God didn't mind flexing his creativity over a matter of mere miles. There was every sport you could want, including hockey, even though you could usually count the overnight freezes of a year on one hand. And everyone was so damned happy that the summer heat had broken, that from October to June, it was one huge-ass party. People taking to the streets, malls, outdoor dining, hiking trails, and citywide events, like it was a slow-roll Mardi Gras. And if it snowed, the residents acted like the world was coming to an end, because it seemed like it was. But the panic didn't last, because what would only amount to a dusting of that white shit was gone by noon. But it also had Stellan. Stellan, who got what he wanted. Always. And he wanted Amélie. And Stellan was what Six wanted. But she rarely got what she wanted, as in never. Thus, Stellan would end up with Amélie.
You gotta quit that shit,
Arius replied, his sweet, soft tone turning biting. Six pulled herself out of dismal thoughts and reacted to his tone, shooting back. And how would I pay for my leather if I stopped that shit?
You'll not have a body to put that leather on if it's buried in the ground, he retorted.
I know what I'm doing, and I'm good at it, she returned.
You've done work for me. That's how I met you. You settled that shit like the pro you are, so that's not in question. But now, you're not a contractor, you're a friend. And I'm not feeling as cheery about your present occupation.
Six quirked a brow. So, say a friend of yours who's in my business is sitting opposite you in this booth, and he happens to have a dick. Would this conversation have taken this turn? Arius's full lips thinned, and he looked to the hunting ground. The expanse of space situated in the middle of the room, surrounded by a classed-up bar on one wall, the other three walls lined with posh horseshoe booths, in order that the doms in those booths could look over the subs in the hunting ground. She gave it time, and he did not answer. So she had her answer. Eventually, Arius broke the silence, looked back to Six, and said,
Lee, we'll find someone.
Or they'll find each other, she rejoined. Arius kept going like she'd said nothing.
And if you take off, he'll find someone too.
Yes, she agreed. When one or the other of them quits circling and goes in for the kill, that will happen for both of them.
Is there a reason you're allergic to Happy?
He asked irritably. That had Six snapping her mouth shut and looking at the hunting ground.
You think he's too good for you?
Arius pressed. She stared at a male sub, who she had not yet had. It was not her type. Her type was a tall, lean, lethal, sexy, rich as fuck, handsome as all hell dom, who, she flicked her glance his way, was right then calling over a beautiful, willowy sub to his booth. She was not beautiful, though she could be described as willowy, at a push. Damn.
You think he's got it all together, and won't want to put up with a mess like you?
Arius kept pushing. Her eyes slanted back to him, and they were slits. But she couldn't argue the fact she was a mess. A big one. And Arius knew that. He did not know because she'd told him anything. She hadn't told him anything. Not a thing. But he was Arius. He read it on her like she had her story tattooed all over her skin. Which, with how much that story didn't feel too good living, it was a wonder she didn't.
You haven't cornered the market on Demon Six. Stellan's got his own, just like you. And he might also want someone in his life to help him beat them back.
I suddenly feel the need to crack a whip, she retorted.
Of course you do,
he muttered, looking frustrated. I leave in a few weeks, she declared. His eyes narrowed angrily.
Of course you do,
he repeated. I might not be back. She spoke the decision she'd right then made.
You'll be missed. And not only by me. You might not have taken this in, but your prolonged stay here, my sweet, means I'm not the only one in Phoenix who's pleased he can call you a friend.
She couldn't handle that, so she didn't. She slid her tight, black leather pants-covered ass out of the booth and took her feet on the stiletto heels of her black boots.
He'll go all in for you.
Arius throwing that out there got her attention again. And she twisted toward him. He kept at her.
Stellan finds the one that's worth it. He'll break his back, sell his soul, work his fingers to the bone to win her and keep her.
And you can't tell me why you know that about him, of course, she remarked.
I can tell you. You're gold in one of my playrooms. And the amount of subs out there whose mouths just set to drooling just 'cause you slid your ass out of a booth lays testimony to that. But you got a long way to go to earn the premier status of dom that everyone thinks you have. You rock at the practical. But if you can't read that on Lang,
You might have it all in practice, Six, but you're not hiding from me. You don't have a lock on the most important part of the scene.
Theory.
How disappointing that I have to strike off my to-do list starting my Dominatrix Academy, she returned sarcastically. And here I was, had the curriculum all set and everything. She knew she'd pushed Arius too far when he spoke again.
Lived most of my life watching the two most important people in it, my mother and my brother, do without,
he fired back.
She did the best she could for her boys, gave it her all, and we still had Dick. Think it was daily growing up. I told myself I'd do something about that. And I did. So now, she's good. He's good. But if you got that in you from the moment you learned how to breathe, wanting the best for the people in your heart, you can't get away from it. So get pissed. Put up your shields. Go play with some sob who means Dick to you, when the man who's taken hold of a piece of your heart is sitting 30 feet away. But don't expect me to like it. And don't expect me to keep my mouth shut about it.
You know, you're intensely annoying when you're being all that's you, especially the good parts, she retorted sharply. He shrugged.
It is what it is.
Can I go for some orgasms now? She requested. Or are you still feeling the lecture?
You can if you promise to think about it,
he replied. Think about what? She asked.
Being happy.
Six stared at Arius Weather's face. Years ago, he'd had a nasty problem, and she'd been referred to him to assist in solving it. When she had, she'd found out what he did, and he found out who she was and guided her to being all she could be with that. During that time, she'd kept taking jobs, but she'd made Phoenix her base, coming home there. Coming home to him. Because he was her friend. The only one she had. Also because she owed him huge chunks of her sanity. And right then, she owed him reining in her smart mouth as well as giving him that promise. Just doing that her way. How about I won't actively avoid it? He shook his head but did it with his lips curling up.
Go,
he ordered.
Play.
Six turned from him, took a step away, and turned back.
I love everything about you, she whispered.
I'd break my back, sell my soul, work my fingers to the bone for you. There is precisely one human being on this planet that has that from me. You. With that, in order not to give him a shot at replying, the way the beauty of his face told her he was going to, she immediately strolled away on her 4.5-inch pencil-slim heels, pointing at 2 male subs as she went, but not breaking stride to the door that led to the playrooms, knowing, with no doubts, they'd follow her. They did. And she did this also knowing she had one pair of male eyes on her, and only one. Arius's. But Six's awareness was unusually incorrect. She had 2 pairs of male eyes on her, and that second set stayed on her all the way through the room and didn't move, even after she disappeared behind the door. 7 months later. It was like a whisper of wind against her skin when the door opened, and Six knew to turn and look. Not because she'd do that as a matter of course just to be aware of her surroundings and who was occupying them, something she would do. But because something told her what was coming, she could not miss. And she was right as she sat at the bar at the Swank restaurant in Washington, D.C., and watched with some surprise as Stellan Lang walked in the front door. He looked magnificent, as he always did. Though she'd never seen him in the way she was seeing him now, with the black cashmere overcoat covering his sleek, bespoke, dark gray suit. The suit was de rigueur for Stellan. But he lived in Phoenix, where overcoats were entirely unnecessary. Sleek, she thought, her eyes roaming him, consuming him, devouring him. That was Stellan. Not slick. Sleek. From the top of his head, that was covered in thick, dark brown, perfectly styled hair, all the way down the 6+ feet that made him, to the tips of his shining custom-made Italian leather shoes. He was an aquascutamad. Cary Grant with a kick. All the polish, good looks, and sophistication, with a rugged, dangerous edge. He was perfect. She wasn't on the job at that very moment, so considering her heart started tripping a faster beat, her first inclination was to lift her hand, call his attention to her, take this surprising circumstance away from Phoenix, from the honey, and turn it into a drink among friends all the way across a continent. Turn it into time with Stellan. Just time with Stellan. She didn't care what they did. She didn't care if he could only be in her presence for 30 seconds to give her one of his charming smiles. One of his head to toes that took every minute detail in and made her clit pulse. Then touch his smooth cheek to hers and whisper a hello in his deep silk voice as she smelled his amazing cologne. Without bidding them to come, the words filled her head. Think about what? Being happy? Yes. Even if it was just 30 seconds with Stellan, that would make her happy. But then he swung his head from the hostess he was looking at to sweep his gaze across the space toward the dining area, and she caught sight of the expression on his face. A chill slid down her spine, and Six was not used to that kind of chill. Murderous. He looked like he wanted to kill somebody. Perhaps not the time to ask him if he'd like to take this surprising opportunity to have a chat over a noontime scotch with a friend from home. He was nodding peremptorily, seeming impatient as well as homicidal, as the hostess spoke to him and moved from behind her station with a menu clutched under her arm.
Ready to order?
Six tore her eyes from Stellan prowling behind the hostess toward the dining room to look at the bartender. Filet, medium rare and air on the side of rare. French fries, she ordered, beginning to turn her attention back to Stellan. But the bartender said,
All we have are pommes frites.
Was he serious? She held his gaze, probably looking a little like Stellan did as he'd walked in, and replied slowly. As I said, filet, medium rare, and French fries.
Right,
he muttered. She glanced quickly to her left, and then to the back of the bar to see the shelves holding liquor were framed in mirrors. Mirrors she could now see Stellan through, as he stood tall and straight, proud and arrogant in that oh-so-special way of his, at a table in the middle of the dining room, with the hostess standing at his side. I'll be moving down to the end, she told the bartender. Cool?
Sure,
he replied.
I'll nab your Pellegrino.
Six grabbed her bag, he got her sparkling water, and with her gaze fixed to the mirror, she moved down 6 stools to the one at the end of the bar against the wall. A darker space, more removed, not as easy to see her. But with that mirror, she had a view of the whole dining room. She sat with her eyes glued to what was happening with Stellan in that room. The hostess had disappeared, and an older man was standing with Stellan. Stellan, who had not taken off his overcoat, and also appeared like he had no intention to do so. Six felt the fissures of tension opening all the way across the space. Stellan was regarding the man standing with him like he'd rather be dipped naked in a vat of slime with his eyes and mouth forced open than be in that man's presence. And the man had to be a relative. The age difference was definite, as was the resemblance. A close relative. Uncle, at least. Or father. The man was holding himself awkwardly, like he wanted to go in for a handshake or even a hug. But Stellan's body language and facial expression were not only not inviting that, they were actively warning against it. And then Stellan shifted, turning his back on Six. That was when Six saw her. A woman sitting at the table facing them, her eyes lifted, trained on Stellan. A look of astonishment and something else suffusing her features. She was blonde, very beautiful, put together perfectly from head to waist, which was as far as Six could see. But that meant it went down further. Perfect hair, perfect makeup, perfect accessories, perfect blouse. And all that perfect was the best money could buy. She was either a professional stylist, a model, or had a professional stylist because she was a model. She looked like she'd walked right off the location of a photo shoot to come have lunch. She also looked like she wanted to eat every inch of Stellan up with a spoon. Six's heart started tripping even faster. And then it happened. The blonde beauty's mouth went slack, and the fissure of tension splintering through the dining room split wide open. Six stopped messing around with the mirror and turned on her stool to watch it in full view, scanning the scene with skilled attention, thus taking it all in within seconds. Six saw the older man now looked infuriated, his face flushed, his brows snapped taut, his slightly jowly jaw having tightened up. The blonde appeared wounded, and Stellan looked done. He proved her assessment correct by turning on his expensive shoe and sauntering away. Six watched him go, all the way out the door, noting that he no longer looked murderous. He looked as usual, aloof. What he'd come there to do, he'd done. And now he was moving on. She turned her attention back to the couple, and that was when she spotted the huge rock on the blonde's left ring finger. Massive. Ostentatious. Six could see it now because the woman's hands were covering her face like she was hiding tears. The older man sat and leaned immediately to her, putting a hand on her back to soothe her. Not in a fatherly way, in a loverly way. If Six had to call it, that man had to be at least in his 60s, the blonde in her 20s. Six looked to the door to the restaurant Stellan had just disappeared through for a fleeting instant before she turned to her bag. She pulled out her slim-line laptop and got the attention of the bartender. When he jerked up his chin, she asked, "Do you have Wi-Fi?" He nodded.
"Password is Booker TMG, the TMG in caps."
Well, whoever thought that up had good taste in music. She thanked him, opened the laptop, started it up, hooked into the Wi-Fi, and as she sipped Pellegrino, then, when it arrived, ate her filet and frigging pommes frites, it didn't take long for her to find it. Andreas Lang, multimillionaire hotelier, father of multimillionaire developer Stephen Lang, had just last week announced his engagement to the woman who would become his fifth wife, Priscilla Newton. Andreas Lang was 69 years old. Priscilla Newton was 22. Six didn't dig any deeper because she wasn't on the job then, but she was on a job, and she needed to eat and get back to business. It wouldn't be until she was bone-weary but unable to sleep in her hotel room late that night, or more aptly, very early the next morning, that she'd go back to her laptop. It didn't take long before she wished she hadn't. She snapped the laptop closed and looked out the window across the night landscape of the purposefully built to impress and intimidate capital of the nation. "This is why I never do a deep dive into people I know," she told the window. She said it, but her heart was far heavier than it should have been, or than she'd want it to be after doing a deep dive and discovering all she'd discovered about Stellan. Six left her laptop to slide between the sheets. in a hotel, incidentally, that Andreas Lang owned, which meant she'd be moving to another one the next day. But she did not go to sleep. She stared at the dark ceiling and did it until it lit with dawn, pissed as hell that Arius had been right. Everyone has demons, including Stellan Lang. But not everyone knew the name of their demon. But Stellan did. Just like Six knew the name of every single one of hers. 6 months later. Six was sucking in breath to handle the pain, driving and hoping with everything she had she could make it to the dock Carlo had told her he had waiting for her without passing out, when her phone rang. When she saw in the dash who was calling, not thinking straight, she hit the button on the steering wheel to take the call. "You got impeccable timing," she said into the car, hearing that her voice sounded strung tight, and hoping the caller wouldn't hear it too.
"How's that?"
Arius asked. "Just that, if I'm going to die, the last voice I want to hear is yours," she thought. "I'm dead tired, but completely unable to stop myself answering when you call," she answered. And all of that was true. She'd just left some things out. Like a couple of fresh bullet wounds. God, if she lived, it was going to be hell getting the blood out of the cognac leather of her beloved Cayenne. Though, right then, that was the least of her worries.
"Just thought you'd want to know.
That stallion I approved for Lee?" He made her wait for it, but not long.
"That shit took. He's the one. And if I'm not sitting in a pew watching them walk down the aisle in 12 months or less, I'll let you spank me,"
Arius told her. At these words, but not entirely because of them, Six swerved, righted the car, and drew in another deep breath that wasn't exactly cutting it to dull the pain. When she didn't answer, Arius said,
"So what I'm saying is, clear shot for you."
"How'd Stellan take it?" she asked.
"He doesn't usually Oprah it up with me," Arius answered,
focusing on the conversation as well as the road, both doing wonders with keeping her conscious. She returned, "Come on, you've got your finger on every pulse of every player in every club you own. How'd he take it?"
"He's not speaking with Lee right now."
Translation? He'd failed to make a play. Screwed the pooch. Now he was licking his wounds. God, but she'd love to lick Stellan Lang's wounds. Kiss all his hurts away. Including the ones she laid on him with him begging her for more.
"You know I want all my babies happy, Six. Come home. Get some happy and give some to my boy,"
Arius urged.
"Stellan is due. And it goes without saying, you are too."
Damn, it was starting to snow. Just what she needed. Driving, listening, talking, watching it come down and trying to stay lucid, Six realized how much she hated snow. Phoenix didn't have snow.
"Six,"
Arius called. "I'm here, but I gotta go."
"You cool?"
he asked. "Peachy," she lied. There was silence before, far more alertly she got.
"Six, are you cool?"
"Awesome," she puffed out, as an unexpected wave of pain hit her when she made a right turn and the movement didn't suit her gunshot wounds too much.
"What the fuck is going down?"
Arius rapped out. "It's snowing," she said.
"Yeah,"
he prompted. "And I'm driving," she told him.
"All right,"
he replied. "So, I've got to concentrate," she pointed out. He returned that favor, sharing out loud her earlier thought.
"It doesn't snow in Phoenix."
Right then, Six made a decision. That was, she made a decision if she lived to carry it through. But mostly, She made the decision because she was realizing acutely in that moment that life was short. Even so, that decision had conditions. "You don't interfere," she stated.
"Say what?"
Arius asked. "I'm coming home."
"Brilliant,"
he muttered, a lightness in his deep voice she hadn't heard since before she left. And they didn't talk all the time, but they talked frequently. Or it was more like Arius checked in frequently. Six wasn't one to stay in contact or give much away. Ever. "And you don't interfere," she demanded. "It happens naturally with Stellan, if it happens at all, without you sticking your big nose in it."
"I do not have a big nose,"
he huffed, though he was pretending to sound hurt. Even in her state, she couldn't miss. He was pleased. "Now let me go, so I don't crash this vehicle and end up in a body cast. Now to my way to finishing this job and heading to the Valley of the Sun."
"The job going okay?"
"Hell no." "It's almost done," she answered. And that was no lie.
"Then I'm letting you go,"
he said. "Right."
"Six?"
"What?" she demanded impatiently, beginning to blink too much, and knowing from past experience, that wasn't good. Maybe she should keep him on the line.
"I love everything about you. I'd break my back, sell my soul, work my fingers to the bone for you. And if you want me not to interfere, I'll do that too. But if you start fucking shit up, I'm in the game. Now finish this fucking job and come home. We miss you."
The call dropped before she could say a word. But it was good Arius got his words in. They kept her going until she was safe. Then, dragging herself through the back door of a clinic that through the powers of Carlo had been opened specifically for her, it was lights out. 1. Let's go. 6. Present day. Six wandered the halls of the Bee's Honey for absolutely no purpose, except to make the boys in the booth watching the cameras that monitored the action in the club think she was taking in the scene. Instead, she was biding time to go into the Dom lounge to get what she'd stashed in her locker. She was over it. Over the scene, over the wait, done. The Honey had now become a place she could hang and have a drink, connect with some friends if she was in the mood, get some of her kink by watching, and torture herself being around Stellan. It was also where she stashed something if she had it to stash. This was because the Honey had surveillance and security that rivaled that of the White House. If a person wasn't supposed to be there, they didn't get in there. The end. She'd been back in Phoenix now for a while. Months. And although she'd put on a variety of shows, bided her time, put herself out there, made herself available, Stellan hadn't thrown down the gauntlet. She sure as hell wasn't making the first move. Thus, that first move wasn't going to be made. So be it. She hadn't expected much, and she sure got that. And she had to admit, part of her was relieved. A large part. Because if he took a shot, what then? Could she protect him from all that was her? Doubtful. More like impossible. She never had, with anyone who mattered. Not that she'd had many in her life who mattered. And Stellan absolutely did not deserve to have to deal with all that could befall anyone who got close to Six. Tonight was different, though. Tonight, she wanted done with the extracurricular activity she was engaged in. And tonight, she roamed the halls knowing Stellan was there. He'd taken a room, and he'd gone off his normal modus operandi. He'd selected a female sub. He'd also selected a male. If in a mood, though that mood was always rare, He'd pick more than one sub. But they were always females. Six had a feeling she knew why he'd done this. She had Google Alerts set up, and she'd seen it. That it being that it was announced to the media that day that the 2.5-month marriage of Andreas Lang and his pretty-much-child bride, Priscilla, was done. Although the press was asked to leave the couple alone in this trying time, it was nevertheless reported that Andreas might often think with his dick and had apparent self-esteem issues that drove him to having a pretty young thing dripping off his arm. But when it counted, he used his other head. The one with an actual brain in it. In other words, he had a reported ironclad prenuptial agreement, and the soon-to-be again Ms. Newton would walk away with the engagement ring he gave her, any gift she'd acquired during their relationship, and nothing else. Nothing else. Not even a settlement. She was young, and Six knew that young didn't make you stupid. It just made you young, naive, and, perhaps with the beauty that girl had, overconfident. Thus, she probably thought her golden looks, mingled with a 22-year-old pussy, would buy her a lot more time to get a lot more gifts. Sadly, she'd been wrong. Six could not know how this news affected Stellan. Although they had exchanged a variety of words since she'd been home, they'd both been at a few get-togethers where he didn't avoid her, but he didn't pursue her. They'd caught each other's eyes on a number of occasions, and she'd noted him watching her work with her submissives, as he'd noted her doing the same with his. They had not even resurrected the loose but friendly relationship they'd had before she left. She put it down to him still smarting from Lee's falling in love with another man. That said, even if Lee had, it appeared that not much had changed between Stellan and Amelie. Although chilly between them when Six got back, that had thawed, and they were as sociable and close as they ever had been. And it was clear Stellan liked Ollie, Amelie's enormous, gorgeous stallion. Then again, everyone liked Ollie. It was impossible not to like the guy. He was just that guy who had it all, and not simply the fact he was so easy to look at. He adored Lee, for one. Utterly. And he did not hide it in the slightest. But he was outgoing, funny, solid. If you were moving house and you needed an extra pair of hands, he was there. If you had a nephew or niece who wanted to be a firefighter, which Ollie was, he'd take the kid through his station and introduce him to all the guys. If you were at a cookout with him and running low on your drink, you found your glass slid out of your hand and another one put in it without even having to ask. Even Stellan, wanting Amelie for as long as he did, couldn't dislike the guy. So they'd become friends. And Six had watched. That was one of the two things she'd done since being back. In a half-hearted attempt to get his attention and keep Arius off her back, she played. And she watched. Which was what she was on a mission to do now, before she hit the Dom Lounge to prepare to complete her other mission. As she wandered, Six didn't spend time watching Mira and Trey in their room. It was tough watching Mira work, now that she had a sub, and they were together. In other words, in love. Mira was good at what she did, and Trey liked what his mistress gave him. But that look of adoration on her face while she was doing it? Six just couldn't deal with it. This was also why she avoided Lee and Ollie when they were at play, and more recently also when they weren't, because the connection they had between them just didn't stop. Right then, they weren't in a playroom. They were still in the bar, holding court. The stallion Alpha Sub King and his dominatrix queen, as usual reigning supreme over the club and enjoying it before they moved to a room to enjoy each other. They were actually worse to watch than Trey and Mira. They were so beautiful together. They were like watching dancers, so perfectly in sync, expressive, at one with each other and their own bodies. The sequence practiced, even if it was always different. It was so graceful, it was sublime. Putting this out of her mind, Six moved on her black platform pumps to the back hall full of playrooms, noting, and not surprised, that Arius's red room was shuttered away from view. The blackout blinds to that room were scarlet, not black like all the others, thus its name. It was his own personal playroom if he was in town. And he was. And he had one of his babies in there, working her. Six didn't need to watch that, although she would have. She'd not only seen Arius at play, he'd worked her, because he'd trained her. He showed her how to be who she was. He introduced her to other doms to teach her the things he could not. And he'd played with her in his sessions in which she was required to sub, so she could understand the headspace her own subs had to get in to serve her. She had been surprised. She'd liked it. She'd been freaked she'd liked it so much. Too much. Arius had handled that, too, for her. Amazingly. Which meant he'd helped her handle it. And then she'd locked it away. However, as she bypassed his room, she felt her lips thin that he was back there with one of his babies, and not with the woman he should be with. At first, when Six arrived back in Phoenix, he'd let things lie. Now that months had passed, he was getting up in her face about making a move on Stellan. Fortunately, she was able to fight back, since he wouldn't make a move on Mistress Talia. Which was where Six went, and where she stopped to watch. Also not surprised that Talia was working a sub, mostly because those two circled each other just this way. If Talia took a sub, and he caught it, Arius wasn't too far from taking his own. If Arius took one and Talia caught it, she hustled a sub into the playroom. Retaliation. As Six watched Talia work a sub named Brian, definitely a favorite and oft-used toy of hers, she got worried. In a heartbeat, Brian would take things further with his tall, slender, lithe, beautiful, mocha-skinned, tawny-froed mistress, and not just because he seriously got off on the way she worked him. She wasn't just beautiful and had a serious style going on in and out of a playroom. She was funny, quick-witted, smart-mouthed, loyal, and very sweet. And Six had witnessed her aftercare of Brian when she got down to serious business with him. And even knowing Talia's heart was with Arius, her head and attention was with Brian. In a way, he could mistake the fact that he didn't have a place in that particular vital organ. Six considered having a word with the mistress. She did that, and then she decided instead to have a word with Lee, so Lee would have a word. Amelie was probably already thinking of doing it. She wasn't Queen Bee just because she rocked a playroom, and she took her unofficial role seriously. But if Six had a word, she might light a fire. And perhaps, if they double-teamed Arius and Talia, they could get something going. Before hitting the Dom Lounge, she found her feet taking her one last place. At first, she positioned herself carefully in order to be able to process what she might see, and at the same time be out of his line of sight. Because he always broke scene to catch her eyes if he saw her at the windows. And the possibility of seeing him working a male sub was something she wanted without him breaking scene. This eye contact, at first, she'd found terrifying, because it was encouraging. It was rare a dom working would do that, unless he was working directly with another dom. When months passed and nothing came of it, Six stopped finding it terrifying or encouraging and just found it weird. There was no invitation in his gaze, no challenge issued, No warmth or comradeship or humor or anything. He'd just catch her gaze and hold it for as long as it took for her to break it. Even if he was physically inside one of his subs, he'd thrust while simply looking at Six, remote and disengaged from her and his sub, until Six herself broke the contact and his attention went back to his sub. But if he was working a male, especially inside one, this she'd want to see. Man on man was a thing of hers, and since she'd returned to Phoenix, she'd indulged in that. Always taking multiple submissives. They were always male, and she'd call the shots to get that fix. Seeing Stellan engaged in something like this would probably make her orgasm right there in the hall. Hell, just thinking about it got her wet. Then again, although this would be an extraordinary sight to see, Six didn't figure it would take much to do that. In all her play since she'd come back, she had not once let a single sub touch her. She'd rarely touched them. And she hadn't had that first orgasm. Not in play, not with some random partner she picked up out in the vanilla world, because she hadn't picked anyone up. Not even at her own hand. But as she hesitated at the edge of one of the rooms Stellan favored, the silhouette and blackout blinds up like he normally played it, she didn't even see Stellan. The female was working the male, and that work was inspired, but there was no Stellan. Six took one step along the hall, another, and there he was, still in his trousers and dress shirt. But the suit jacket was thrown over the back of the leather club chair he was sitting in. He had his long legs crossed, and he was slanted to the side, elbow on the arm of the chair, head propped up in his hand where it held his square jaw at his knuckles with his forefinger extended along his chiseled cheek. She drew in a breath, at the bored expression on his arrestingly beautiful face. That expression running deep into his dark blue eyes. He did not look annoyed, upset, or distracted, as news of his father acquiring then disposing of another wife in a matter of months might make him. He didn't look anything. Certainly not like he was in a room where sweet and dirty sex acts were being performed at his command by the slaves he'd chosen for the evening. He looked like he was in a meeting that he couldn't wait to get out of. Then suddenly, his gaze came to her. He didn't move, didn't lift his head, just swept his eyes straight to her. Not like he'd noticed her standing there, like he'd sensed she was there. His expression didn't change, neither did his position. He stared her right in the eyes, pinning her to the spot, giving her nothing except his regard. She wanted to scream. Why? Why do you look at me like that? Why can't you give me something? Anything? She didn't do that. Of course not. She accepted the only challenge he gave her and stared straight at him in return for as long as she could stand it. And Six could stand a lot, so this lasted a long time, perhaps full minutes, before, as ever, and as ever wanting to kick her own ass, she broke the contact and walked slowly and as casually as she could fake it, away. Once out of sight of Stellan, she didn't mess around going to the Dom Lounge. There were cameras in there too, but she'd given herself a reason to return there after she had a drink in the hunting ground. This being so she could collect what she'd put there a week ago and be done with the job she was on, so she could then collect the paycheck. She did just this, going directly to her locker and grabbing the small, boxy, black python Alexander McQueen clutch with its four finger loops topped with various skulls or roses. A clutch she'd placed there after she'd arrived, rather than giving it to reception, which was what most of the doms did. Inside was a slim business card-sized wallet with a credit card, ID, and a few banknotes, her phone, Another phone that was hers but also not. Her lip liner and lipstick. Her fabulous vintage compact with mother-of-pearl inlaid in black, depicting cranes flying across a yellow moon. Her cayenne key fob. And nothing else. With her back to the camera, she grabbed a random vibrator she had in her locker, twisted off the bottom, where you'd put batteries, upended the flash drive she'd hidden there, and slid it in the lining of the clutch that she'd jimmied so she could open it, hide things behind it, and then press it back in place where it held. She then went to the mirror. At first, she didn't look at herself, but instead used it to take in the plush surroundings of the Dominance Lounge. Deep-seated, purple velvet banquettes spanned the walls. They were covered in red and silver velvet toss pillows. The patterned silver wallpaper behind them was bottom-lit with soft light. There were attractive steel tables with scented candles glowing on top of them. The lockers were made of the same steel as the tables and looked like a bank of cabinets with a variety of digital locks, not lockers. The gleaming black basins had no faucets, just wide, lush waterfalls that activated by motion. There were no paper towels. Instead, thick, soft purple, red, or silver hand towels and washcloths. There were showers around the side, as well as a jacuzzi tub, a steam room, and a sauna. Available for use was anything you could need. Disposable razors for men and women, and shaving cream, aftershave, a variety of colognes and perfumes, hairspray, lotions, oils, deodorants, tampons, condoms, face moisturizer, bath soap and scrub, shampoo and conditioner. Submissives were specifically disallowed there. The lounge was for downtime and dom time outside any scene. If a sub needed to be cared for or it was part of a scene, you requested a room that had those amenities, and the dom took care of that. And Six longed to stretch out on those banquettes and close her eyes to the D.L. & Co. candles that smelled like vanilla, balsam, and pepper, soothing and spicy. So very Arius. So very the honey. God, she loved it there. It was like her home. It was the only place outside being on a job where she could be... what? Not herself. She played a role there. No one knew who she was, not really. Except Arius, or at least he knew more than everyone else. Not even people she called friends. So why did she love it there so much? And why was her heart hurting that she wasn't getting out of it what she needed anymore? She looked at herself in the mirror. "Because it's safe," she whispered to her reflection. That was it. And now, it no longer felt as safe, because Stellan was there, and wanting him and not having him, but more, knowing she should never expose him to what it would mean to have her, hurt. That didn't make sense either. She'd wanted a lot in life, and never got it. But Stellan was different. Stellan was. Six shook off her thoughts and took herself in through the mirror. She couldn't see the black pumps or her long legs she'd sleeked, not only by giving them a close shave all the way up to her pubis, but also with a subtle oil that made them shine. What she could see was the black leather micro mini that sat tight on her hips, cupped her ass, and had a wide black belt with a bold silver buckle. Up top, she wore a white leather modified camisole that had a deep plunging neckline that went to her midriff and spread wide at the sides, showing the inside curves of her smallish breasts. The straps were very thin. There was a tight band across her ribs. It was cropped, but not by much, showing only a hint of flesh at her belly between camisole and skirt, depending on how she moved. Her hair was short, clipped in a graduated bob at the nape of her neck. The champagne highlights in her dark cinnamon hair looking, she thought, great, in the sweeping long bangs that fell well past her eye. The sides of her hair hanging below her jaw, all the ends in messy flips. She had to style it, which was a minus. But it was so short, it didn't take long. And it had a sex bomb vibe, so that was a definite plus. She looked into her wide brown eyes and wondered, what next? A weighty question, because it wasn't about what was next for her at the Honey, but what was next for her with everything. At Arius's appeal, which meant repeated demands, she'd given up the job. Ostensibly. As far as he knew, Six had gone legit, working as the internal investigator for a large local law firm. However, directly due to Arius's interference in some of his other friends' lives, a need had arisen in Phoenix when Branch Dillinger stopped doing what he did out there and became the operations manager for all of the bees' honeys. Nature abhorred a vacuum. Q6 stepping in, because first, her pay at the law firm was good if you weren't used to making a lot more, doing a lot more dangerous shit for a lot more dangerous people. And second, if you were used to doing a lot more dangerous shit for a lot more dangerous people, as well as used to the adrenaline rush that got you, it wasn't an easy habit to break. So she had a proper job, not a normal one, but one that included a 401k and a biweekly paycheck that gave her insurance benefits. And on occasion, she moonlit on the side. Arius didn't know. No one knew, except her friend and sometimes partner, Sylvie Creed, and her husband, Tucker, who she and Sylvie sometimes had to call in to help. But Sylvie wasn't in the life Six pretended to lead through her play and relationships at the Honey. Even if Six got off on it, and the cash she accumulated doing it, not to mention the freedom that offered, she knew she couldn't do it forever. She had the scars to prove that particular story you told yourself to stay on the job was a lie. But what would she have if she stopped? The kink was getting boring. There were only so many orders you could give that led, perhaps in a lengthy way, but nonetheless the end was always the same, to someone else's orgasm. It had lost its appeal, because she wasn't connecting. She used to connect. She used to stay mostly silent, watch, listen, open herself to being acutely aware of every expression, or even twitch of the skin, to sense what her sub wanted. Then, she'd find some elaborate or creative, but always hard-earned way to give it to him. Now, she didn't even have that. Anyone could give their own self an orgasm. It was her job as a dominatrix, regardless if the emotion wasn't there. The attention and the respect and the motivation and the deliberation had to be there to connect. Somehow. Some way. That was gone. So what was the point? To yank herself out of thoughts that were going nowhere, even though her long-lasting lipstick was doing its job, she still opened her clutch, pulled out the liner and lipstick, refreshed the ruby red, ended it with a nice coat of clear gloss, and dropped the stuff back in her bag. She then grabbed her phone, not her actual phone, the other one, before she clicked the clutch closed and made her way out of the lounge, deciding to have a drink while she dealt with the details of finishing up her final mission of the evening. She wandered the halls, doing it, having to walk past Stellan's room, and hit the hunting ground. The back corner booth was open, so she went there, flipped open the burner phone in her hand, set it to silent, and then used her thumb in the onerous task of hitting the numbers on the pad repeatedly to get to the letters she needed to send the short text. Really, smartphones were a gift from God. The drop happens tonight. She tucked the phone by her thigh when a server came, and she decided cool but luck six, mistress with the mostest,